We've been hearing an awful lot about AI lately. How do you use that intelligently and wisely? Well, stick around. I've got an expert who's going to show you how. Hello, and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I'm your host for today, and I have Oren Saban with me, who's going to talk about redefining SOC performance with AI and wisdom. Oren, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and nice to meet you. Nice to meet you, everyone.
So one of the most persistent challenges we have in a SOC, or the Security Operations Center, is the gap between how fast we can respond and how fast the attackers evolve. And for years, we've relied on detection, and then we tune our detections and we have to deal with it. But the volume of alerts keeps going up. We have to worry about, of course, false positives, because that means that we try to go ahead and respond to something that's a waste of time. Of course, the false negatives tend to be worse, because that's a real problem that we let get through. But we're beginning to realize that this creates an imperfect result, which kind of like a Swiss cheese security. It's got hidden blind spots where we have some static exceptions. We'll go ahead and allow that, but it weakens our overall defense. And so this is where the concept of an AI-driven SOC comes in. It's not about replacing the humans. Don't worry about losing your job if you work in a SOC or you run a SOC. It's about creating a hybrid workforce where humans and machines are going to reset this business dynamic so they can innovate faster and make better strategic decisions. So we're moving into an era where software development and security are being disrupted by AI-driven workflows, automated cycles. Things are going faster and faster and faster. So today's educational focus is on Made Security, a company recently selected for the 2026 Cybersecurity Startup Accelerator with CrowdStrike, AWS, and NVIDIA. And the founders came out of Wiz, Microsoft, and Apex, which was bought out by Tenable. So some pretty solid credentials here. And you guys focus on wisdom-led performance, which I want to get into in our discussion, because that sounds fascinating. It's a philosophy, if you will, that treats false positives as assets for learning rather than just time wasters. That's a complete refocus. Like, whoa, wow. This approach is built on the idea that AI should empower the super analyst. You cut through alert fatigue. You elevate human teams to proactive threat hunters with better and stronger judgment. Instead of some autonomous SOC that runs without any oversight, you're going to advocate for keeping AI on a leash, but it's doing the work for the AI agents that are supporting humans. They stop kill chains and detect novel threats in real time. So, joining us for today for a little bit more discussion, how do we can close this gap between the attacker evolution and defensive response, is Oren Saban. He's a co-founder and the chief product officer from Made Security. Oren, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you too here. Now, you've written extensively about the AI transformation of product management and security. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and what led to the founding of your company?
So thanks for having me. And Oren Saban. I've been building products for the last 10 years, even a bit more, and taught product management for 5 years of those. I've been leading one of the biggest product management courses in Israel. And the thing that I've always obsessed with was the gap between the sometimes mediocrity of what the tools promise for what practitioners actually experience in the day-to-day. And before Mate, I spent a lot of time in the security watching SOC teams drown in alerts while vendor kept selling more and more dashboards, and it felt that something is broken. And we found a Mate because we believed the problem wasn't more and more detection. There is a lot of, here's a risk, to the point that we just don't manage to do security work, right? And knowledge sharing, orchestration, communication problem, which is the baseline of how we build our community, same problems as I've seen also in the battlefield in the past. The industry got better in saying something happened. Not perfect, but we get better at that. But not good enough at helping the teams actually figure out what to do. What does it actually mean? And fast enough to matter. So it's great. And then, I've seen at Microsoft, there's lots of ransomware attacks that you can... There were alerts. We've seen alerts, but nobody picked them up. Or even if they did, they didn't actually understand what's behind those alerts. And my co-founders also bring data engineering and security research background. And together we ask this concept of what if we actually leverage the data that is out there and we build AI that thinks like the great analysts of our think with the organizational context, not just the log data. And there is a paradigm shift that is happening, a new type of consumers to this backlog per se, which are AI agents. And those need to have the right knowledge in order to actually operate precisely. And this is this problem that we're trying to solve.
So we have sort of a pyramid of data, information, knowledge, and wisdom. You know, data is ones and zeros. The information are the patterns. The knowledge is being able to put it together to come up with some decision criteria. But wisdom really is a direction. And you're kind of going for that, which I really like. And that intrigued me when I first heard about you guys. Now, in your recent research, you mentioned defenders are losing the race against attackers. So why is this gap between defensive improvement and attacker evolution growing so rapidly right now?
So the honest answer, I think, is that attackers are adopting AI faster. They don't have compliance boards or procurement cycles. They just ship, right? They deliver. And the deeper issue, as we're barreling towards the log4j moment of the AI era. I think everybody saw Moltbook in the last few weeks and what's happening with OpenClaw. And instead of a single vulnerability, which we deal with today, we're about to face swarms of autonomous AI agents probing infrastructure simultaneously, even if not tomorrow, let's say by end of year, take my bet. And these aren't scripts. They can reason and adapt and evade detections on the fly. And this marks the death of human speed SOC, because you won't be able to handle it, right? You can't find a machine with our capability. You cannot defend a machine speed with manual playbooks that are not dynamic. And we're entering the era of machine versus machine. We're seeing a bit of that in the battlefields. We're seeing that also in the cyber warfare. And compounding this AI-driven development compressed shipping cycles and the development side from months to hours. So the attack surface is expanding faster than any manual security team can verify. And that leaves defenders stuck in a paradox, right? You can buy more tools, it will create more noise, which you can't handle, but not more safety necessarily. And this is the paradox that I think everybody understands. We all understand that we're walking through. It's a question of how fast. Seem to be moving very fast lately.
Yeah, it's a little bit frightening. And for those of us who have to address conversations with boards of directors and explaining to them that we're kind of losing this race. And the classic approach of tuning your SOC, we're going to reduce the noise, we're going to go ahead and try to set some sort of squelch, if you will, or threshold below which, yeah, this is low probability and low impact. That you guys refer to as Swiss cheese security. So I'm guessing you're not advocating for Switzerland, but what are the hidden risks of having this approach of static exceptions to an existing construct or policy or framework?
So a great question. I think everybody knows what happens in a firewall with 15,000 different exception rules for nobody can manage. And the person who started that left the company years ago, maybe they're already out for pension, but nobody wants to say the detection tuning is often equivalent of sweeping problems under the rug. Right? Every time you add an exception to suppress a false positive, sometimes there's a complete false positives and that's fine, but you're creating a blind spot to some extent for something that you're trying to tune it for your organization, but stack enough of those and you get this, what I call the Swiss cheese security. Right, it looks solid from the outside, but it's full of holes that attackers can slip through. And the industry treats tuning as a best practice. I think it's often a coping mechanism where the real risk is that these exceptions are static and they were written based on conditions that existed at a specific moment, but the environment changed, new users, new assets, new business relationship, the exception stays frozen. A classic example we can look through is you suppress alerts from a service account because it's expected behavior, right? It should go to the service. And then 6 months later, the service account gets compromised and nobody notices because you told your system to ignore it actively. The alternative isn't to stop tuning, but it's to make tuning dynamic. This is a lot of what we talk about, a wisdom-led performance.
Right. So understanding the context of what's going on and recognizing that these things are dynamic, because it reminds me of the quote from Bill Cheswick back in the 1990s when he was at AT&T, described when he with his firewall, it was like a hard, crunchy shell and a soft, chewy center. If you got past that first perimeter, well, in you go. Well, we do have a lot of defenses and things like that, but in our SOC, as you had said, you create an exception, you open things up. And for me as a CISO, I'm always finding these exceptions. And it's like, wait a minute, you didn't tell me about that. Why is this? Well, somebody forgot their MFA token, so I let them in. Okay, we'll create a one-hour window and then close the door. Don't leave it there until the next time we have an audit or things like that. But, I mean, humans are important, but the big fear that I'm hearing, and it's been going on for well over a year, is that AI is going to replace all the jobs. Now, how does your company define the concept of a super analyst? And in this particular case, you're saying AI is going to empower rather than replace the SOC team. And that sounds very intriguing. Tell me a little bit more, please.
So I think, let's be honest about the tier one triage as a full human job. I think this one will go away. And that's not a threat. That's a correction. Like, we never should have had humans doing such a repetitive stuff, pattern matching at scale in the first place. The super analyst concept is where we think analysts will level up. And this is what's happening in software engineering, which are usually the pioneers of such movements, and is going to happen across other areas. And the concept is what happens when you're free people from the grind, right? You get analysts that actually investigate because they don't have just to do the same playbook without thinking again and again. They connect the dots across incidents. They govern what they see. They understand the business well enough to assess real risk, not just severity scores. And then AI processes massive volume of data and correlations, and human handle the sometimes organizational politics, right? Which we need to handle as a security team because we need someone to close this vulnerability. And yes, it's important enough. He might know how to represent the business impact of that. Judgment calls. Super analyst is someone that is using AI like a surgeon. Uses imaging technology, right? The MRI doesn't replace the surgeon. It gives them the visibility to something they couldn't handle otherwise. And I think it really comes through to the place where you have the surgeon, now it's the analyst, they have all these assistants, they're handing them all the different tools for them to be able to make the judgment call on the most important thing that you should do now.
I like that analogy of MRI and the doctor, because you're right, it lets them see things they couldn't normally see and make better decisions. But we're doing more than just saying, well, here's a box, go look at it and look at the printout. You're talking about a hybrid workforce where you have human AI collaboration. You don't talk to an MRI machine and have a conversation with it like we do with AI. But this is a new business dynamic. And so how does this workforce, this hybrid workforce, what's it going to look like in a high-pressure environment like a SOC?
By the way, I think that every doctor, if they would have the opportunity to talk to the MRI and ask a further question of what they're seeing and not have to call for the patient again for 3 months later to take another MRI because this was not taken right, they would opt in. If you have such a startup, go out. that will succeed for sure. But in practice, hybrid SOC, for me, it means that agents are handling the first maybe 70-80% of every investigation, gathering context and reaching indicators, checking asset ownership, pulling historical patterns, and presenting the human and decision-ready packages. There's places where you trust them enough and the blast radius is high, the potential impact is low. Yeah, you can take the action. So the human job shifts from figuring out what happened to decide what to do about it. Like, if we were to be able to deal with response and kind of shift left in the SOC world to better protect, right? And I don't even talk about detection. I want prevention. How do I deal more with prevention? Because that's obviously will give me less about a noise. So I'm thinking about it like in ER. Again, if we take the doctor, you wouldn't have a doctor taking your blood pressure and checking insurance. You have support staff and systems to prepare everything so the doctor can focus on diagnosis. And security engineers, like we said, are like surgeons. That's what a hybrid SOC looks like to me. The key dynamic changes is the speed of decision-making. When an analyst gets a pre-investigated contextualized incident instead of a raw alert, their response time drops dramatically from hours to minutes because they can deal with actually making the call, having someone prepped it for them.
That, I think, makes really good sense, is that we're going to increase the ability to make decisions and, of course, increase the fidelity of those decisions so they're the right decisions. You can make bad decisions fast. That's not really a motivation, but you're making the right decision fast. Now, you've recently announced the concept of a security context graph. Why are you putting emphasis on data structure when you're looking at a SOC agent solution?
So it's a good call out. That's what's actually supporting what we found to support the best to AI to reach accuracy. And we saw, and I've seen this before in my previous roles, that AI security tools fail not because the AI is bad necessarily, but because the data they run on is bad and not reliable, conflicting, specifically also bad in structure. So security data is fundamentally relational, right? We want the connections. We always build graphs. And alerts means nothing in isolation. It means everything when you know who owns this asset, what's their role, and what was their business process, what were they doing before, who are they working with. Now, what we found is that traditional store logs, everybody know that, they're search engines for events. They built for human kind of system of record. But an investigation isn't only a search problem, it's a reasoning and correlation problem. And the security context graph restructures security data into a connected model of your organization, your unique organization. And this is important because if I'll bring a very, very smart security researcher into an enterprise, Fortune 500 enterprise tomorrow to their SOC, will they be able to be operational at day one? The answer is usually no. Why? Because they don't know anything. They don't know the architecture. They don't know the baseline. They don't know what is the alert even about. They're pretty clueless. And we can't expect, shouldn't be a double standard for AI agents. I can bring a very smart AI agent. If it doesn't know your own unique environment, it won't work well. And now we have the ability to actually personalize security. So when an AI agent investigates an alert, it's not just querying logs. It's traversing the graph now of the organizational knowledge. This is the infra for the stage where AI agents are the beginning of every investigation that is happening on top of our logs.
So really with this context, it's rather than just looking at isolated log entries or things that have really no, I think context is still the right word for it. You're able to put that together and say, this is the pattern. This is what has been normal usage. This is abnormal usage. And here, because we're training and we're looking at this particular organization, we can tell that this just doesn't happen. Something's wrong. But if agents run only on human data, are there issues there? I think you alluded to them that it's really not designed for context. It's just a bunch of logs and humans looking at logs, as you said, at level one, it's just totally repetitive. But here you're saying we could do more than just kind of look at the data information. You're pushing up toward the wisdom frame, right?
Yeah. And I would add that it's at the bottom layer. Yeah, it's the same amount of data that we collect. But on top of that, there is a knowledge layer that today is missing, right? That we in our humans, we calculate it in our head. We just don't say it. Like, I just have the intuition that something is right. But why do I have this intuition? I've seen this 10 times before. It's a bit of a different situation, but I have the calculation that I have pretty high confidence and it's relevant. All of these are not as easy to machinize or productize in a way on top of just our SIEM logs. So the whole correlation, memory, thing that we hold up and build to our intuition, into our brain, we're trying now to give those to the agents, right? And this is the gap that the security context graph is actually bridging. Getting this, what we call percentage institutional knowledge sometimes, or other assumptions that we have taken along the way, decision traces, there were a lot of discussions on top of that, and building that into something that agents can actually traverse on to get this intuition that we try to bring to the table.
Got it. I think one of the things that a lot of us who've been experimenting, working with some early AIs and LLMs, the like, is a problem of hallucinations and wrong answers. Basically, it comes down to trust. Well, if you're going to integrate AI tools into a SOC, you're going to need a lot of trust. You're going to need to be able to know that these tools are going to work correctly. What does it take to trust an AI tool? And then do you just turn it loose all at once? Do you gradually give it privileges? And then what should you be looking at as you provide more and more autonomy to the AI tool set?
So I think classic psychology, right? Trust is earned incrementally. Like you start with AI as an advisor. We all have done that with ChatGPT. And then it investigates and recommends. We see it's lying one time, so we don't trust it for his decision anymore. But a human makes every decision, and you watch the quality and measure the accuracy of that over time. And then you graduate from investigation types where the AI demonstrated consistent accuracy, say 95% alignment with my decision. Okay, now I can give it more autonomy because now I trust it, right? It happens again in security, in software engineering, same thing. And then maybe it can auto-close benign alerts for this noise because maybe I didn't have the capacity as a SOC to deal with these lows and information as, but I throw the AI agent on those and now I increase my coverage, but it does find out some interesting things. So organizations look for three things that we've mapped before granting autonomy. What we call a CPR, it's another model of ours, a confidence, precision, and versatility. So transparent reasoning, can you see why the AI made the decision and audit trails and you review every action? This gives you confidence because now I can actually see the logic of how it's built after one time, second time, third time, I started to trust it. The surgical response, right? That's the precision capabilities. So I don't shut down the DC, the domain controller. I have more surgical response. I operate with an RTR of CrowdStrike to actually pull the malicious file and get inside of those. So this gives us the precision that is needed. And the deep tool expertise we bring to the tables give you the capability to know if you have a rollback. What's going to happen after I click this button? This is a question that a lot of security practitioners ask themselves. Like, will I get an angry engineer or an angry CEO? It matters a lot. And then, I think that this is a lot of how I build trust with systems in general and specifically in such a high reliable things like security.
So I like that. So the three, the confidence, is it going to do what you want? The precision, is it going to act correctly? And then the reversibility, or as you said, or the rollback, if it turns out that somehow it was a wrong step or a misstep, it doesn't say, oh, I deleted the production database because it seemed like at the time. We've heard about some AIs and doing things like that. So we're really going to keep that AI on a leash. Now, a lot of metrics of success for SOCs typically focus on volume. We had this many alerts, we had this many tier one, this many tier two, blah, 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 blah. But do you believe that AI automation makes these old security metrics obsolete? And if so, what should CISOs be measuring instead?
So I don't think it makes all of them obsolete.
Okay.
Right? It makes some of them. And for example, the measurement of count, like how many would be irrelevant because we're going to go into a role of there's lots of alerts. If I have a good AI SOC solution, I can even increase the rate of which I get false positives and increase my detection rate because then I get someone to clean the noise and I'll catch more threats. We all know what it looks like in terms of how data science work, right? But so alert close per analyst is not something that it becomes meaningless when AI handles 90% of those. But investigation quality, what were right decision made, whether it's with a QA, with LLM as a judge, we have more capabilities around this area. That's going to be interesting. Obviously, when I work with an MSSP, I want to validate their work. And I'm going to look into that. Coverage confidence, what percentage of our attack surface is actively monitored with our new AI? So coverage over SOC U. I think a SOC shift left. How many of the attacks are we actually preventing to beginning? It's great that we have awesome things around detection and response. How do I take the lessons learned? And we spoke a bit about it, about like false positive is an asset. I think also true positive is an asset, right? I can leverage the things. And just in a regular SOC, in many cases, we don't have enough time to take and see the pattern of, let's take the phishing of our last month. What actually was the RCA? What type of phishing campaigns? Were we seeing a CEO impersonation that is coming more in the last few days? And now I can mitigate in a much more granular, we spoke about precision level, at the get-go. I don't need to get to the level of detection response. I want to block it even before it starts. So move left in the kill chain down to the recon. And then the time to actually make a business call, a business decision, of course, it's not about closing a ticket. It's the time, the threat containment speed. And this is what we hear from our customers that are actually interesting for.
Interesting. So as we talk about moving to the left, I mean, you recently published some research on React to Shell. That's the CVE 2025-55182 for anybody who wants to look it up. So how does your approach help a SOC catch these little subtle signals before they turn into a confirmed remote code execution problem?
So I think this research highlights how much the ground is shifting, right? With React server components, we're blurring the line between a client and a server. React to Shell wasn't a loud explosion. It was a serialization exploit where attackers sent data that looked like legitimate component, but tricked the server into executing code. A traditional SOC tool looking for signatures might miss this, right? We are shifting to a place where it will look malicious in a vacuum. It only becomes malicious in the context. We spoke about context, right? It happens a lot now with engineering tools. The distinction between an engineer and an attacker with hands on keyboard or with some package, malicious package that comes in, it becomes very, very, very close. Attackers are becoming more engineering. We're seeing that also out there. And their tools are becoming more engineering. Obviously, agents are writing code. So it comes down again to the context. And the approach we look into help because we don't just look at the raw packets, like your ZTNA would. We analyze the relationship when the input, the application, the output, the behavior, the baseline. And if a component meant to render a user profile suddenly spawns shell commands, that's a behavioral contradiction. And a wisdom-led system or a very smart analyst would flag that immediately.
Right. And so I can see what you're doing there is you're incorporating what, as you said, a wise analyst would do, but your AI system can do that. Now, you know, recently we saw some node package manager, NPM things compromised, I think 18 of them, which is really kind of a supply chain risk for anybody who's doing crypto. Now, using node.js is pretty popular, got millions that are out there, but how would a wisdom-led SOC respond differently to this type of a supply chain attack than perhaps a traditional one?
So, yeah, I think this rocked the world a bit because it was so common. Right? The scary thing about these recent package attack, like NPM, Chalk, Debug, is these are foundational utilities we inherently trust.
Yes.
Open source, like the malicious code was heavily obfuscated. Static scanners, again, until we got the IOC of the CTOR, the filtration channel that was there, it missed it. And a wisdom-led performance SOC focuses on behavioral context, right? Why is a text coloring library trying to open a network connection to an unknown IP?
Mm-hmm.
That's a question. Why is debugging tool trying to read an AWS secret key?
And yeah,
in places where it didn't before, in some cases, Truffle Hawk would be very useful. In a vacuum, again, it doesn't look malicious. But when you apply the context of the library purpose, it becomes a screaming red flag. And we believe the future is monitoring in the runtime behavior of trusted assets to see when they betray this trust. So again, we can level up the sensitivity of systems when we have the ability to cope with them. And when we lay on top of that, the context, we're able to look into detection from a very different point of view.
So trust is really contextual. And I think it's an important lesson that you've just mentioned there. I'm writing some of these things down as we go because I want to refer to them later. Now, typically, when we look at AI these days, people are justifying it. Well, it's a time saver. It allows us to do things better, faster, cheaper. But if there's a CISO trying to justify a solution like yours, or doing AI-driven security automation for their SOC, is there anything beyond just saving time? I think we've alluded to it, but let's reiterate that now so people listening in can take their own notes and say, yep, these are the points I need to make when I talk to the board or the boss.
I think efficiency is the obvious ROI, right? But the real ROI is capabilities that you didn't even have. Like before AI, most SOCs were reactive by necessity. And AI frees the capacity, as I said before, to be more proactive, to do threat hunting, systematic detection, improving your exposure management. And so there's also the risk reduction ROI. Like every hour of reduced dwell time reduces the potential of blast radius, right? Of a breach. And there's another one, like there's a lot of implications that we're seeing today. Like when you have such a deep the documentation for investigations. Now, the level of analytics on top of your investigation gets insane. We are able to generate very precise reports of what's happening that derive lessons learned in a much more granular way. It actually drives you to an action. Those are reports that are driving you to an action. It's not obvious. And it saves a lot of time. Reporting takes, we always talk about handling alerts. There's so much head over on top of that that people do today that is very manual and what we call a grind, right? And the last ROI, which I think is very important, is the talent ROI. A lot of people I talk to, they are finding it hard to find talents. And we find it here same today, right? SOC analyst burnout is a massive hidden cost. And as well as someone senior leaving your team, the knowledge goes out the window. And onboarding time, right? How long it takes to onboard someone for a complex enterprise with 3 SIEM solutions and 2 EDRs and have a leftovers of McAfee on these servers. Like, this is hard. And eliminating grunt work improves retention. And you aren't just making your SOC a superstar, you're making them capable of things they literally can't do with humans alone. So I think about it like a training ROI. We know from educational research that a personal tutoring is the single most effective way to learn, right? When you have a one-on-one person teaching you, you're getting better much faster. And a wisdom-led SOC gives you the junior analyst. We're asking where senior analysts will come from. I think now they will be able to elevate, like junior analysts will be able to elevate, to up level much faster because they have senior partner at their fingertips next to them. They know their specific organizational history, the architecture, the past incidents. And instead of generating a generic training, they get real-time coaching on their environment, accelerating their growth from senior junior to senior. And the retention and upskilling value is massive as well.
Wow. I mean, it's kind of like a win-win all around. Now, you'd mentioned a couple tools earlier, and a lot of times we talk about tool fatigue. You've got users, or I'm sorry, SOC analysts that have all these different tools. But if AI agents are fatigue resistant, right, they don't need a coffee break every now and then, they can just ingest this. Is that suggesting that we, instead of moving toward tool consolidation, we ought to go back to as many tools as possible? Because doesn't that enrich the wisdom of our AI? Is that a countercurrent, or are you saying something different?
So I think tool consolidation was necessary when humans had to context switch between 15 different dashboards. But AI, AI agents don't experience the same cognitive load, or they can do it in parallel and just call all of those. I was very annoyed, for example, with me having 5 different messaging systems. I've had WhatsApp, I have Messenger, I have my Slack, I have others, Signal, Telegram. Now, when I'll have an OpenClaw version, right, I can talk to one assistant, it will talk to many, then this problem maybe is not a problem anymore. So the question flips from how many tools can my team manage to how many data sources can my agent actually leverage? And the answer is as many as possible. We call it too integrated to fail, right? When I have multiple signals looking into the same attack, I can actually leverage that to get more fidelity on the alert. And however, more tools only equal more value if they're integrated into coherent picture. It can also create confusion. So it's a lot of questions of how they fit into the graph. You want these many data sources, few dashboard with reasoning layer. And another very strong value that it brings to the table is that you don't necessarily have to bring all data into one place. Like, this is an assumption that we used to have, but now might break. We want it for detection, but things that we need for investigation, for enrichment during investigation, for response, maybe we go to the source system. We don't have to double pay to have data integrity problem to manage the pipeline in order to actually get there.
Right. So we could actually, if you will, use the logs in place rather than make a copy of them and then go ahead and pay for that. And of course, anybody who's looked at the cost of log storage as we get more and more and more logs, it does go up. Yes. We talked a little bit, I mentioned it at the very beginning of the show about false positives and false negatives. And oftentimes a false positive, hey, that's a problem. No, sorry, never mind. We kind of hate that as an analyst because it looks like we were crying wolf. But you're saying that you can make false positives an asset instead of a time waster. Tell me about that concept. I find that fascinating.
So, yeah, we really see false positive as an asset. Because in a traditional SOC, right? You suppress them eventually to silence noise and creating these Swiss cheese we spoke about before. And a wisdom-led thought is trying to think, always learn, right? I always want to get better from every action that I do. How do I get better from now to the next step? So why did we think it was bad? Like, why is it actually okay? Let's make sure we get to the bottom part of it, because we also, I must say, we made catches a lot of time where analysts get it wrong. They do. I've seen this in Microsoft as well. We were somehow reaching out to customers saying, hey, we think something bad is happening here, and you said it's false or benign positive. And basically, Mate uses this data to build the context graph of the same organization. So a false positive on a VPN login tells you the detection rule doesn't account for legitimate remote work. So maybe the policy is not right, right? And then you want not just a mute button, but you leverage that for how do I look at it at the next investigation and your specific environment without creating this permanent blind spot. So now, eventually, as I see more and more of these events, I can look at them as a whole and I can say, okay, why didn't we refine, like, how can we refine the policy in a way that we don't introduce threats, but I know exactly what's the thing that is happening now. Maybe, as an example, let's take the VPN example, or someone in going in impossible travel. Everybody hates impossible travel. Impossible travel alerts. So we can introduce a way to validate that the user is actually abroad before we fire the alert, if we see that this is what's creating noise in our environment.
So really, instead of just having fixed static detection rules, we're looking at more dynamic context. The wisdom function is being able to say, hey, this is a context-aware defense. And that makes really good sense to me. Now, what I'm finding intriguing, though, is the availability of Mate Security. It's now on the AWS Marketplace. It's part of CrowdStrike, AWS, and NVIDIA Accelerator. You're participating in those. Does being part of those ecosystem help you out? Do you get wisdom from them, or do they just write you a check and say, we want to make a lot of money off you?
So I think being part of this ecosystem isn't just a go-to-market play, and it's more of a data integration play. The wisdom in our platform in Mate comes from the depth of context that it can build, how good it knows the security tools of your stack. And we know that a regular team will buy lots of tools, utilize not many of what the tools can actually give. I can tell you from the Microsoft side, a lot of Microsoft customers don't leverage as much as you can do. Microsoft built awesome stuff around security. They're not leveraged, and Mate knows how to leverage them. So by integrating deeply with the AWS infrastructure, with the logs of what they generate, with their guard duty, with the CrowdStrike endpoint data, with their log scale, our customers' context graph get richer and more deep into what they can actually give you. So the accelerator gives us access to the partnership depth that make our agents smarter. And we are just sitting on top of these tools. We're ingesting signals and building this context graph in a higher resolution picture, per se. And so the tighter the integration, better context, better understanding, more accurate the investigation is.
Love it. I think it's great. Now, if you look at the future, as we get into the AI era where software development, Cloud Code is pretty amazing. Anybody's played with it. How do security operations change to keep up with this faster shipping cycles? Do we have to keep changing things over and over again?
So I think, yeah, developers ship quotes a lot, not daily, but hourly maybe with
them. Yeah, exactly. It says it's just boom, 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 boom.
So the attack surface expands daily or like every hour, and it moves so fast. Security operations must become, I've called it CICR, continuous investigation, continuous response, right? Similar to what the engineering have. Like continuous context aware, not periodic. It needs to be like the liquid software of JFrog. SOC needs to understand not just what's in production, but what changed today, who changed it, what's the risk profile of that. The security context graph is critical exactly for that sense. We need to be able to traverse way faster than we used to before. And yeah, the organization, like to understand the organizational code of new code instantly rather than waiting for a manual review cycle. And this is a must-have.
OK, Got it. So we're kind of moving the humans out of the grunt work stage into a more strategic level. If we're letting the AI take care of that low-level stuff, if we are reducing the false positives but learning from them, if we are ensuring that the contextually aware tool set knows that this is suspicious but that is not, and things such as that, what are humans going to be doing in the future in the SOCs? Are we going to be sitting here and drinking our lattes and enjoying ourselves, or is there a more strategic role for humans here?
So I think, no, sadly or happily, it depends who you ask, but the amount of work is growing. We're just closing the gap. And the strategic work is threat modeling, something that we all want to do. We don't always get to do, right? We need to better map what's the attacker is going to do and how we're going to react to that. Agents governance, that's definitely going to be a thing. I want to monitor these agents if they're drifting, if they succeed in their tasks or not. And again, it's happening in adjacent worlds today already. And that's going to move to security for sure. More profiling of adversaries, I think across functional risk communication. Now we build this structure within each of our different departments in vulnerability management, in threat intel and exposure management, and a post-breach, we want to connect those to make them communicate. That's definitely something that we'll need humans to help, and humans are going to move and shift to do that. And I think eventually relationship building is also going to be very important. Like, how do I collaborate with peer organizations? We're not good at that as defenders. Not good at all. And like, there's FS-ISAC, there's some other initiatives that's not as good as the attackers selling ransomware for $200 in dark web.
And they don't have compliance requirements where they can't share PII and all this sensitive stuff. It's, they operate without those constraints.
So I think eventually, like, there's high value human skills that are becoming more important when AI generates better insights.
Got it. Hey, as we're getting close to the end of the show here, I'd like to know, what is your vision for the future? If we look 2 or 3 years out, and what I'm hoping, based on this conversation, that we're going to a wisdom-led SOC structure. How is that going to play out for the CISOs, the Chief Information Security Officers, and those in security leadership interacting with their SOC? What changes can we expect to see in the next couple of years?
So going back to, I think every time in security we had like this log4j moment of AI, I think it's inevitable that 3 years out, human speed SOC will be effectively gone because we just won't be able to cope with what's coming. And you never want to be the slower runner when the bear is running behind you, right? And we'll see also, in my perception, static indicators becoming less important as a primary defense, because attackers can now use AI to obfuscate malware on the fly. A file hash or a domain or IP even might be meaningless 5 seconds after it's used. So the future is going to be more, again, towards behavioral, TTP-centric with context. And we'll likely see small specialized AI models running directly on endpoints and applications using shared security context graph between them to understand what normal looks like and to detect deviations from this real time. And this shift, again, focused from investigation, which is reactive, to disruption and prevention, which is definitely where we should head or where we should aim, and in my perception. So when this log4j moment of AI hits, this swarms of agents that attack simultaneously, the goal isn't to triage alerts, is to have the ability to have shields up, right? Shields up capability and machine speed, the SOC role becomes tuning the logic of the defense that gives you the insights from one attack instantly to update prevention rules and become more defensive. Again, we're seeing that in other words. I think we're not fast enough and I can do it. And then the CISO is not going to ask, like, how fast did we find it, but why didn't our stack block it? And how do we automate blocking for the next time?
So you're really proactive, and I love that. So it's kind of clear from our conversation that the future of the SOC isn't just about more tools. It's about better coordination, smarter automation. And if we move away from the Swiss cheese model of static tuning and embrace a hybrid workforce of humans and AI, we can start to outpace the attackers and actually be in a better position. So I think the key takeaway is that AI is a force multiplier for human judgment, not a replacement for it. And if you want to explore more about these concepts, you can head over to your company, Mate Security. That's MATE.SECURITY, no.com at the end, you're a .security. So thank you very much, Oren, for being part of CISO Tradecraft. To our listeners out there, thank you for listening or watching, and we hope you found this useful. And until next time, stay safe out there.